Welcome to Radio Evolve, our web radio for consciousness and culture. And I'm very happy to have as a guest today, Ilya Delio. Really happy that you can be here.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Mike. Thank you.
So Ilya Delio, you are a Franciscan sister and also teaching theology at the Villanova University. You are the founder of the Center for Christogenesis, about promoting the vision of Teilhard de Chardin, but you also have a Bachelor of Science in Biology, worked in neuropharmacology. So, and your work and your path, you know, spans quite a wide spectrum. from the science lab to the monastery. I think you also started as a Carmel
yes, right.
Sister. So to again into science and into theology, and to how this all can maybe meet together. And along the way, you were introduced and very much inspired by the vision of Teilhard de Chardin, the mystic and scientist, that really opened up evolution for a new view on Christianity. And maybe to start with, you wrote numerous books about all of these topics, and your one of your last books is called The Not Yet God. And maybe we start with that, because it's quite an uncommon view of God as something that is not yet what it can be or is. And how would you speak to that? Why do you think it is important to see God or to understand or experience God in this different, in this new way, as not yet, as unfinished, you could say?
Right. Yeah, right. I realize that that title, the not yet God, can really throw people off, because I think that word God has this idea that there's this big being or this already fixed something that, you know, is watching over us, or that we agree with or don't agree with. And I think the question of God has become very problematic in our own age, and in the sense that people are either for this God or against this God, and all this kind of silliness, quite honestly, because we kind of lost our way with regard to what the meaning of God is or what religion might mean. And so we've kind of shrunk wrapped all this stuff to fit our size. And I think a lot of the chaos of the world today is all kind of God seeking stuff, you know, whether it's like politicians or AI. And so it's a lot of power things going on. So a lot of my work is trying to reset the dial on, like, what are we, you know, and what is this whole package deal of religion or spirituality? And so, you know, I like Teilhard because I like putting who we are within the flow of evolution. So we just don't appear here, you know, as these complex creatures. We emerge over a long period of time. And so I like to begin to understand ourselves as beings, as creatures who are in a flow or a flux of life itself. And so that itself changes everything. It means that life is dynamic, it's creative, it emerges into newness, which means we are a species in transition. So we're not perfect, we're not gonna be here forever, we're becoming something. And so where does this question of God come in? You know, so, I mean, I'm Catholic by culture and tradition, and as a Franciscan, so I'm kind of committed to this, you know, way of faith. And I do have, I have a very different view maybe of Christianity than most people in the church. But I do think that there's something very vital within the Christian tradition that has yet to be really tapped. So if I were to just take this word God, even from a biblical perspective, I mean, Jews always have a very kind of a relationship with a living presence, you know, a covenant, this kind of this power. So God never appeared even in scripture as like the perfect being, or I'm going to take care of you guys, you know, and you just don't know what you're doing. God was always like this presence that enters into, which is an emergence of consciousness, right? So as we come out of archaic religions into kind of axial religions, there's a shift in consciousness. That's pretty well known. And consciousness, as we're kind of discovering today, is very complex. So we don't really know what it is, but what we can say, it's something like informational flow or complexified levels of information, informational reality. It's something that is tied into and part of materiality or the physical nature of our beings, which means that as we develop physically, consciousness itself develops alongside that. So as we become more complex as beings, consciousness itself rises. And religion is part of that phenomenon. So if you go back to ancient religions, you know, there was an awareness of spirit in nature or belonging to this communal whole. And then at some point there, because of urbanization and tool development, consciousness shifted to more of the individual. So a new kind of awareness of something beyond us, you know, emerged. And this is kind of the beginning of the monotheistic religions, Judaism, Islam, Christianity. So, you know, religion just not something that, you know, God said, let there be religion. It's something that emerges within the flow of evolution. So that's number one. Second is Christianity itself, you know, as a kind of monotheistic tradition, also has within it another evolution of consciousness. And so I think, I don't think, you know, Gandhi once said, Christianity is a great idea, it just has to be tried, you know. And so there's something about Christianity that has not yet really been born. That's part of my quest here. If you look at Jesus, I mean, he was anything but like this very rigid, hierarchical, you know, perfect being. He was engaged. He was, you know, outward moving, very deeply personal. He had a deep experience of God. He was passionate about justice, about, you know, bringing in a new type of person, a new type of community. He was driven out of that God experience within his life. And so, you know, Carl Jung, I think, is one of the people who really kind of read Jesus right. You know, he wasn't too worried about what the Vatican would say or what the churches would say. And he read the New Testament. He said, you know, look, Jesus really comes to a sense of self, you know, where he's kind of reconciled with who he is and what's going on in his life. It's kind of process of individuation. And out of that process of wholeness that Jesus acquires in his life, he comes to a new sense of freedom. And so freedom in love, freedom to live out of this power of divine love that's impelling him to a new kind of existence. But then I think that kind of, you know, got hijacked, quite honestly, in the early church as Christianity became politicized. So, you know, we have, you know, the Emperor Constantine who wants sole power. So, you know, politicians are pretty much the same today as they were in the year, you know, 300 something, 25. And so Constantine really kind of politicized Christianity. And then we had all these debates about whether Jesus Christ was really divine or human. And so I think we, without intending to, we kind of morphed Christianity into this philosophical argument of what is the true God and what's the false God, and you know, Jesus's divinity, and it really lost its initial power, you know, its initial drive, which was much more consonant with the dynamics of evolution. And it became packaged into sort of an acceptable state religion that you had to adhere to, just like you adhere to the emperor, you adhere to, you know, the pope. And that kind of got consolidated in the Middle Ages with Thomas Aquinas, you know, with very, very abstract thinking, very philosophical. So all of this to say, I think we inherited in the 20th century a philosophical divine being that we name as God that became sort of like Zeus, you know, sort of like this absolute being that you had to adhere to. And that's a lot of what modern science says. Well, we don't need Zeus anymore. You know, we have tools, we have methods, we can discover, you know, how life works without this God. And so God got pushed out. We don't need that God anymore. And so, you know, that didn't land us too well because without a kind of functioning God, we have little gods. So we had the little gods of nuclear power. We had little gods of, you know, arms race. And so, you know, modern science pushed God out, made a lot of discoveries. But at the same time, the 20th century was one of the most violent centuries, you know. So the Death of God movement really landed in a horrific catastrophe for the human community. And so that kind of led theologians like Paul Tillich and, you know, following the Hegelian kind of trajectory, like there's something going on here in history that we need to pay attention to. And so, you know, I think Tillich and then Jung, Teilhard, these are all things, Whitehead process theology emerged. So they began to think deeply, you know, what is life about? Like, what's empowering life? And so Tillich's notion of depth, there's a depth dimension to life, really began, I think, an awakening to there's something more here than mere materiality, right? We're not just a group of neurons or blood cells. There's something more here. And I think that kind of awakening to ultimate meaning, to ultimate depth, doesn't matter, you know, what religion you belong to. The question of belonging, that's a later question. You know, the fundamental question of religion is a question of what gets us up in the morning. You know, that's the religious question. Like, what are we bound to ultimately? What makes life worth living? That's the Tillich question. That's actually Teilhard's question as well, you know. And so all of these thinkers, you know, were very influential on my thinking. I also think they were, you know, if I were to trace this back to Middle Ages, kind of deeply Franciscan. You know, Francis of Assisi was very earthy. You know, he wasn't a big abstract thinker. He was just about rocks and stones and, you know, birds and wolves and, you know, it's about feeling. It's about knowing through feeling and knowing through engagement, which, you know, ties in again with the sense of the world is there's more to the world than meets the eye. And that kind of, you know, that all those ideas began to, you know, formulate for me, like we need to revisit the question of God. It's really way off. And it's going to kill us in some ways if we don't kind of reawaken to what this word God means for us. So that's a long-winded answer to your question.
Yeah, thank you for that. So rich. And when with this phrase and not yet God, or that God is in movement, in motion, in evolution, is unfinished, it also points to a potential or a future or a kind of horizon in which what we call God can move into. And can you say something to that? How you see that, or how you perceive that potential, or how we can maybe, you know, come closer to what that could be?
Right. So, I think, if you go back to Thomas Aquinas, because a lot of Christian theology is based on Thomas Aquinas, he borrowed from Aristotle the notion of, matter and form, essence and existence, and basically said God is, God is essence and God is existence. So God's essence is God's existence. So God is the being of being. And, while that may have worked, and it works for still a lot of people, the fact is, modern science has radically changed our understanding of what is. So I think philosophy should not be done today apart from modern science. That would be my first thing. You just can't just bracket science and just talk about philosophy like some abstract discipline. It just doesn't work. So science is telling us something about like what we call being, existence. And it's saying that to exist, in the kind of as Heidegger recognized in the mid-20th century, is to be thrown, right? It's dynamic. Like existence itself is never static. It's always becoming. So to be is to become. And science helps us further that by saying that it's always moving, certainly from quantum physics, right? We're always in this sea of possibilities, always in this sea of potentialities. But consciousness is so wedded into, what, any possibility becoming an actuality. So the role of consciousness in quantum physics, in my view, is fundamental. Now, I just have to bracket here and just say, not all quantum physicists would hold this position. There are about 28 different schools of quantum physics. But I have been persuaded by the Copenhagen School, Niels Bohr's notion that, Max Planck's idea that consciousness is fundamental to what matter is. So, in other words, we can't talk about matter or materiality apart from consciousness. You can't get rid of your mind and talk about some objective reality. It just doesn't work. So all reality is, in a sense, a subject reality. It's always being a determination by something or someone somewhere. And that kind of insight from quantum physics, I think, has caused us to rethink. There's no objective being. There's no, like, you can't talk about God as something that is. There's just, it just doesn't exist apart from our consciousness or determination of that it exists. So, going back to that, I think we can, if God is the depth dimension, in other words, God is just presence or power or possibility. I think that's what the word the word God really points to. In fact, Raymond Panikkar would say conscious of God, in ancient Sanskrit was the name for light or consciousness. And so in this way, I think Eastern religions might have a closer, approximation to what God is in the sense of pure consciousness, but even that, so, as Tillich would say, it's not just pure consciousness. God is the ground of consciousness. So God is the horizon. In other words, you can't exhaust God because God is always the possibility of what can be actualized. God is always the possibility of consciousness. That's what the name God means. So having said that, in other words, even as you look as the trajectory of this religious consciousness, this awakening to something more than ourselves at the heart of ourselves, that's kind of the key here. You can't remove the self from from that which the self is waking up to. These two things are one and the same, in a sense. And that, kind of led me to reflect on the fact that what God is in a sense, first of all, within us, right? There's no, it's not outside us. Like that, what God is in a sense, how I live from this depth dimension of my life. And second is that this depth dimension, depending on how I respond to it. If I ignore it, then I live in a sense without a conscious awareness of God and just treat the world. If I pay attention to it, then I'm called into something. And that, I think this is where Jesus becomes kind of a paradigm, a model for us to respond to that power of love, that possibility of more life within us, is to respond in such a way that we are to let go of what hinders us from paying attention to this presence and respond to it by acting out of this presence. So this is where I think what this God is becoming depends on our response. So it's not that God is, just there and will always be there. The possibilities will always be there, but they need to be actualized. I think that's what the Christ is about. Like, love is a nice idea, but unless it's actualized, it's completely meaningless. It's just an idea. And it's the same thing, like the power of God to bring about a world of unity or justice or peace or goodness. That power or possibility is present, but it needs to be responded to. It needs to be actualized. We need to make a determination for our lives. And so I think for me, Jesus, is an example, as Jung would say, he's sort of the model, the prototype of the self, the self of the self who comes home to that God center within. Which means that God is a great idea. I think God is could be possibly that who brings about this moreness of life. It's what God promises in the scriptures. I have promised you a new heaven and a new earth, meaning a transformation of what is. But that God cannot be realized apart from us. And that's why this is why Teilhard takes the Christ not as just a belief system, but as symbolic of what reality is to be. It's to be transformed in this power of divine love, which means it needs to be actualized in love. And so I think, whether or not God is the future, we can say that in terms of the possibilities of life are always ahead of us. But for the reality of God to be that future, that kind of response on our part is needed. We have to awaken to a power of love within us and live from that power of love in a way that we are changed and the world is changed by us. And so the not yet God means that God remains an open question. I don't think we are just entirely too presumptuous about who and what God is. And then we create wars over this God as to who has the right God and who is the wrong God and who God favored and who didn't favor. And I'm like, this has nothing to do with God. This has a lot to do with human power and the power to power of fear, quite honestly, because I think without this power of God, God as that possibility of the fullness of life. Without that, we are existentially very fearful creatures because we fear absolute nothingness. And so we are always, if we're living always between absolute nothingness and the promise of a new heaven and earth, we're either going to make ourselves gods or we're going to open up to a new understanding of God that can really help actualize or bring about, a transformed world.
Yeah, what you're pointing to, I mean, it's quite a big and deep picture and also understanding of the human. I mean, as very much participating in that process of God becoming, you could say, and like you're saying, it also the actualization depends on our responses. So we are very much, you could say, participating in that process and are in a certain way also needed for that process to unfold, and for God to become.
Yeah.
And you, I think you see also ourself. I mean, that's, I understand also the reference to Carl Jung, our human self, or also what human actually means, also how Teilhard understood it in a very deep and way. And maybe you could speak a bit towards that. I mean, also you mentioned the individuation, which also brought us to that ability to be aware of ourselves, and a self that can also participate in that way. At the same time, also the individuality, individuation also brought us into separation, from each other and the world. And how do you see the transformation of ourselves in that context of maybe becoming more available
Yeah.
to that deeper process that you are speaking?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good question, Mike. I do think so, several things. One, I think institutional religion, I think the traditional religion here, I'm just going to speak about Christianity, both Catholic and Protestant forms of Christianity. You know, the institutionalization of religion has actually worked against us in many ways. It has drawn our attention outside ourselves. It says that there's something more beyond here, you know, whether it's heaven, you know, I think the traditional, I'm going to speak from the Catholic side, you know, traditional Catholics always like, you know, praying to go to heaven, you know, and that God will save them. And this whole notion that, you know, Jesus saves us has been so reduced to, you know, this notion that we need a savior who's not us. You know, because we're too weak and we're fallen, and look at us, you know, all we do is just, and so we've never, institutional religion has not empowered the human person, you know, to say no. When we say you are image of God, it means that power of God lies within you, like you have a divine dimension to yourself. And you know, when you tell people that, they're like, oh my God, no way. You know, there's no way I'm, you know, unless you tell certain politicians, they'll say, yeah, I'm God. You know, but the fact is, and also institutional religion has kept the mind out of the explanation of, you know, who God is. Like you kind of put your mind at the door of the church and then you just go to church, you know, and it's this routine of prayers or songs. And, you know, the good news is that it's about a call into community. And I think, you know, that's what church gets right. Like, there's something about us. This is, again, we learn from science that we are intrinsically relational. A relationship's just not a great idea. It is what we are. Like, the word being itself is, as Thich Nhat Hanh told us many years ago, it's misguided. It's really about interbeing, right? We belong to one another, as David Bohm says, because we're part of one cosmic whole out of which all life is emerging. But we have developed different religions and different cultures and different ways to say, oh no, we are not you, you know? And so that we humans have divided the world that we long to heal. And that's a problem, right? So we're a very conflicted species, the most conflicted, in my view, of all terrestrial life. The trees and flowers and plants, they're doing great. And they will do fine without us, quite honestly. but we are ambivalent. We don't know who we are. We don't like who we are sometimes. We want a God who's going to save us from this fallen world. And we can consistently orient our attention to something that's not here. And by the way, this is where artificial intelligence can play a role because it's sort of like the collective unconsciousness on your internet. and everything you can possibly desire or think about or want is in the touch of a button. And so the fact that we are not happy with the here and now, with who we are in this world as it's given to us in this moment, it creates an existential crisis for us. We're always kind of in some kind of anxiety state or some type of uncomfortable, we can never really feel at home. And I think religion has been, kind of played a major role in that. And yet it can play another role as well. This is what Teilhard saw, that, if we can realign what this God means for us, this power of life, because God is the name of life. That's really what we're talking about, right? Life unto the full. And who doesn't want that? I think that's what we all long for. And we're not even sure, what would we do with life to the full? Will it ever become full? And all of that now is what we're grappling with. And I think Teilhard recognized that this God of life is seeking to become more than something in us. And that's why he said that God is not his Teilhard. This is the Jesuit priest in the mid-20th century saying that God is become complexifying in evolution. God is becoming something more as God takes on new forms of biological life, as God rises into our higher levels of consciousness. And all of that means is that we become aware that life is seeking more life, and we're part of what that moreness can become. That's all that that's saying there. And so, I find traditional religions stifling because everything's so old and it wants to contain everything in a very formal structure. And it's saying, don't walk too far out of the structure. You'll wind up in an evil world, or you're going to wind up in sin, or you're going to wind up in, going to hell or something like this. And I'm like, that's just crazy, in my view. Well, I shouldn't be that blunt, but I am sometimes because it's so unhealthy, right? It's very unhealthy. And I don't think Jesus would have recognized this. He would have said, "What are you doing? What's going on here?" So Teilhard himself, I think, helps reset the dial. He's not a big Jesus person. He doesn't spend a lot of time talking about Jesus. He speaks about the Christ as a cosmic principle. Like what happens in Jesus is not to Jesus alone. It's about what the whole cosmos is about from the beginning. Like, love, God, seeking to become something to be actualized, seeking to become real, in on this earthly life. And so, so this process, it's a pro we're process people. We're in a process of life. And therefore, I think traditional religion says, oh, here's the whole deal. Here's the whole story. Just buy the story and you'll be fine. And that's like the worst thing you can tell someone, right? Because life doesn't work like that. And Jesus didn't work like that. Jesus didn't have everything figured out. You can see like he starts just wandering from one village to the other. And as he meets people along the way, he's very spontaneous about what he's doing. So I find a real disconnect between the New Testament and institutional Christianity. I find that the God that, institutional Christians want to pray to is too old, too male, too backward-looking, too static. It's just not the God that, showed up in Jesus. And Teilhard recognized these things and says, no, evolution is about something is taking place here, and we're part of that something taking place. It matters how we think, it matters how we live, it matters how we are in tune with our own self, what we are aware of within ourselves, and it matters most how we love. For him, love is the core energy of the universe. So I don't know if I answered your question, but there's a long way around.
it's great. And I think this love, it also speaks to something that I think you also mentioned, but also you mentioned in different ways in your writings, is the wholeness of it all. You also speak about a relational holism, I think.
Yes.
And also you pointed to that with the interbeing and with this relationality, which is in a certain way another name or another expression of that love energy. And I understand this wholeness also, goes for you very deep and very far, also about the wholeness of matter and consciousness, and also the wholeness of us as persons, and regarding what Carl Jung was pointing to. Can you speak about that? How you see that wholeness, relationality and wholeness as something that can open up really a different way to understand who we are and who we are in the universe and in this kind of relationships.
Right. So, that emphasis on wholeness, for me, it came actually from reading Teilhard de Chardin's The Human Phenomenon. It's how he opens up that work. He says, nothing but the whole, and what that meant for him, that wholeness for him came from his discussions with physicists, quantum physicists, who were saying, again, there's no such thing as matter apart from mind. So, I think one of the greatest, perhaps in our time, revolutions is the discovery of general relativity and special relativity, Einstein's theories of relativity, which means that matter is really just a form of energy, right? So energy is the name of the game. That's really fundamentally what we are. And I think that's what the best of physics is telling us, that matter and energy are two forms of the same reality. That you might say matter is energy packed into form. So, a drop of water is a form of energy that becomes a vapor, at lower levels, and ice at a higher level of I mean, lower level of energy. I switch those around. Anyway, all of this to say is that if energy is the name of the game, and quantum physics is saying we don't, energy is just fields of particles in motion, and we don't know what they are, just possibilities. And I find quantum physics very strange, by the way. I mean, by no means do I understand it at all. As Richard Feynman said, if you think you understand quantum physics, you don't. And matter is not what it seems. That's really what physics is telling us. All this to say is Teilhard was familiar with these ideas. That's really what I'm trying to get at. And so that energy, in order, it this is where Max Planck said consciousness is fundamental to what matter is. No mind, no matter. That's just basically how it goes. David Bohm said something of the same thing, and he spoke of implicate order, that mind and matter are really two aspects of a wholeness. And there's kind of a maybe some kind of a mediating or what how however these mind and matter are brought together. But this is the stuff that scientists study today. So this question of mind, or I take mind as a field of awareness, as informational flow, and that's part and parcel of our energy fields. And so Teilhard held to panpsychism. In other words, all matter has some level of mind within it. And therefore, he said, that this wholeness that he was talking about was bringing the mind and matter into a unified field of existence of deeper consciousness. So, in other words, we become aware that who I am, what I am materially, what I am spiritually, what I am psychologically, all of these are fields within fields within fields of a single whole. And so it's a relational wholism that even this word God, has a role within it. Right? God's not something outside it. God is, you might say, the whole of the whole, the wholes. And so wholeness is our deepest reality. Again, as you know, David Bohm's work, I think, was very influential here, certainly on me. Teilhard didn't know Bohm, by the way. So it's interesting that his work parallels Bohm's, but never really directly was influenced by it. But I might also add here that this notion of wholeness plays out in Alfred North Whitehead's process theology or process reality. That Whitehead looked at the way science was disclosing this new wholeness in nature. He was very influenced by quantum physics as well. And so, what we call the real or being or existence is really a dynamic wholeness of interrelated levels of reality, mind, matter, and these become, complexified. Complexity is an important word here because it really points to the dynamism of relationality within these fields of energy fields. So that over time, these relationships build up into something more intensely relational. So we move from, say, quarks and leptons to atoms and to eventually to single cellular life, multicellular life, to little animals, to plants, to bigger animals, and then to us. And so it's a kind of recursive pattern, as Teilhard would say, that this pattern of complexifying life, where matter becomes more deeply relational and consciousness rises, this is in a sense what he called the law of recurrence and the law of complexity consciousness. And it continues on in our own time. So, in other words, we have built a world where we parceled everything out. Religion's here, the mind is here, the body's here, the soul is here, here's your family. And so we've carved up the world into tiny, tiny fragments. So we live in a very fragmented world in our everyday conscious, in our everyday working out, but our deepest reality is wholeness. And I think we know this deep within us, and we long for that wholeness. I see this in younger generations, who said, no longer, I'm spiritual but not religious, or religious is not important. I mean, that's fine, but they have a deep longing to belong to, an earth community, a community of justice, a community that can bring about, alleviate world hunger. To bring a solidarity of justice to places in the world. So the relational wholeness that we are is more visible today than ever before because of the way technology has allowed us to connect on new levels of mind, creating a global mind. What warrants against this, or again, it are our educational systems, for example. Actually militate against relational holism because they continue to educate us in hyper specializations. So you're an economist or you're a theologian or you're a philosopher or you're a scientist. You study in different parts of the university. You only talk to people who talk to you in your own discipline. So we're educating for a world that no longer exists. And yet we are throwing graduates into a world that's highly complexifying and rapidly so now with AI. And so education works against us. I think institutional religions, they are in some ways working against us, and they have the capacity to work for us. And that's a lot of what my work is trying to do, to repackage religion for the world we actually live in. And wholeness is what Teilhard symbolized by omega, that there's this presence of what he called a deep presence of love that is both within us, and it is more than us. It's a power that keeps drawing us on to, that which we long for. And that's belonging to a whole, to a complexifying whole where mind and matter and persons and community, we're all interwoven, not by collapsing us all together. Wholeness, by the way, does not mean a vanilla blending, like we're all going to be doing the same thing and thinking the same thing. Even as Teilhard recognized, wholeness is the richness and diversity and the beauty of different languages, different persons, different expressions, and the recognition that, what one person has in a unique way can help complement what another person doesn't have, and what another person has can help make up in what another person. So we're like fractals of light, we're like a big stained glass window, and each person and every leaf and every tree is radiating a beauty, a profound beauty of divine love in a particular way that it contributes to, it's part of, it's its own wholeness, and yet without that wholeness, the fullness of love cannot be realized. And I think that's what Teilhard had in mind as well, that there's a beauty to, to the uniqueness of every living being. Certainly as a biologist, he would recognize that as well. So yeah, and so one other thing is that this term Christogenesis for him is a process of evolving wholeness, what he called cosmic personalization, that we are becoming something more together. And we have, we have something of that today, even in our networked world, that we have something like a global body, that has formed. We know it. I mean, here we have a Zoom between Germany and the US. This is fantastic. We would have never had this, 50 years ago. We know what's going on in every part of the world, instantly almost. But what we need, he said, is a global soul. We need a global heart. We need, and that's where the sense of personhood, the sense of what this name God can point to in our lives, could make a difference, in building a reservoir, or like a wellness of love that can help animate what we are becoming together. Because we are becoming something more together now in an AI world. So wholeness, it's happening with or without us. It's certainly happening. It's happening to some extent in technology, but now we're on a threshold that how we choose and what we choose with our technologies is going to make all the difference in the world, literally. We are either going to fragment ourselves ever more and then basically kill ourselves off with technology, or we will create a new level, what Teilhard called the ultra human. We'll move from this kind of partial divided humanity into something that is more deeply relational, deeply connected, and that could be deeply caring for the wholeness of the earth. So again, a long answer to your question on wholeness, but it plays on every level of life.
Yeah, and it also points to something that that resonates for me with this re relationality, and also how you're saying we are so connected, becoming connected through technology and kind of global awareness. And at the same time, there is this fragmentation, and it speaks also to a possibility to me that this wholeness, or also this energy of love or omega, like you're pointing to, can really show up between us human beings and with the bigger earth and the living beings in that relationship. That relationship is somehow a mystical, how you say, a mystical a reality that can also, be a space for that wholeness and that sacred kind of wholeness that we come from to show itself,
Right.
to come into being, and to also transform us in that way you are talking about, that we as we as human beings become much more relational beings in that way, interbeings
Right.
in that sense, and that this is not only a kind of, how you say, nice nice thing to do, but
Exactly.
it is
Yeah.
actually part of that becoming of God, or of the wholeness that is always, you know, present in the universe. And yeah, so I sense that the kind of mystical significance of that
Yes.
relationality, and maybe also to ask you in that direction, because you are, you know, you are speaking about religion and all this kind of different religious, philosophical, spiritual ideas, but you're also a mystic, so to say. You are a Franciscan. You are, you know, also not only inquiring into these ideas, but also calling towards a kind of inner opening to that. How do you see the mystical path, or what kind of, you know, religious field of experience is opening up in this, how you say, in the
Right.
stream of ideas that you are pointing to?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I've always been in, so it's really interesting that the best of Christianity, in my view, has always been among the mystics, and in particular, the women mystics of the Middle Ages, because, you know, they were so constricted in their outer lives by everyone and, you know, men and the church and everything. But they found a real freedom and a deeper level of awareness of belonging to a whole in this kind of lived relationship with this power of love within them, you know, that was God for them. So, you know, they did, they, you know, and that's what we find with the mystics, even in our own time, that, you know, the person who is free enough to live from a deeper center within begins to see the world with new eyes, and they begin to love from a deeper center, and they become bold. In other words, they're not fearful. They're fearless by imposing structures or by, you know, kind of threats from the outside, because they know that there's something more here to live for, and so, you know, Karl Rahner, the famous Catholic theologian, once said, "The Christian of the future will be a mystic or will cease to exist at all." That was extremely prophetic, you know, and I think he was absolutely right. I think he himself was a mystic. And so mysticism, Teilhard, by the way, saw that evolution could only proceed toward Omega with the mystical dimension or that inner dimension. And so he places mysticism and evolution as two sides of the one movement toward this wholeness of Omega, or this wholeness of being in love. And that means just really your work, you know, that you're doing at Evolve. It's not a, it doesn't have to mean you belong to some religious entity. It means being in touch with your deepest self, which is a, there's a lot of great work going on today in this regard. And what that means, this self itself is becoming opening up to new understandings as we understand our way of engaging the world and the way the self is constantly being created and recreated through dynamic engagement. And therefore it's just being, allowing oneself to be within one's own skin, you know, within one's own heart, and to trust there. That's the hearth, or that's the fire that animates everything else. And so I do think our world pulls us again, especially social media. It diverts our attention away from the self, and it says, "No, your self isn't that great. You need to become a better self. You need another self. You need to look like this. You need to think like this." And so, you know, again, it's a trap of kind of dissuading us from really coming home to our own, you know, individuated selves, to becoming home to the self in the self. And therefore, social media has no guardrails. It has no policies, no guidelines. And we have to begin to make choices of what is most important to us. And this kind of this developing the mystic, the sense of the hiddenness, and that's what we mean by mysticism. It's the hiddenness. And we don't know that. I think the human person is the most incredible mystery alive. Like, we don't, it's not that we know ourselves with all our science, it's that we really don't know ourselves. That, the more we discover, the real, we realize there's more to discover. We are an endless, endless source of infinite life, infinite mystery. And that's why this name God is the ground of that life itself. It's not a mystery of God within God's self, it's the mystery of God within us. And so we need more practices. We need more, again, I've been in higher education for a long time. The way we educate by dousing students with information, like, read 10 books and 500 pages by tomorrow and write 14 papers. And, for what? I mean, the best learning could be just by going into nature, by a lake or a pond or in the forest and just being, in silence. In that space of solitude, I think all that we need to know can be found in that moment. So we're overly informational and we are the least relational. So we have lots of information and fractured relationships. And that's why recovering the mystic, the hidden dimension of our life, may be the most important work of our own time. Like, we really have to slow down and take note of that. Who are you? Who are you in the deepest center of who you are? And when you go into that center, you realize it's an endless journey. It you never, you're always arriving and then leaving and arriving at a new level. And that's what the opening up of awareness is then, even as the mystics, throughout Sufism and Judaism, Kabbalistic traditions and Christianity, all the mystics come to a new level of reality, right? They begin to see the deep interconnectedness of this whole, and they begin to love in a way that is like a luminous thread that binds everything into a new wholeness. And so, I think the way forward into the future is to bring mysticism and AI into the same breath. We need to see these as two aspects of the same reality. That AI can either unravel us, by saying you need to be something more, you can become something different, you don't have to stay what you are. And mysticism is saying, yeah, you can become something more, but the moreness is already within you. It's already there in a power or potential. But it needs you to come to deeper levels of awareness now to begin to engage the world from a new reality. So they're kind of competing one another, the mystical dimension and AI, and yet they're actually operating in some ways out of the same, space. So it's kind of my short take on mysticism and AI.
Can you say a bit more to that? Why do you think, or how do you say that they work from the same, the same dimension, or how do you make the bridge between this mystical inner dimension and what AI opens up, and how could, the awareness of this mystical depth can change with AI and that
Yeah,
potential.
so I think the mystic, the one who comes into those deeper levels of awareness comes into the deeper levels of possibilities, right? So, when you come into those deeper levels of awareness, you begin to see what the possibilities of life expand. You can see new places of of peace. You can see people in a new way, even your people who oppose you or, don't like you or whatever that is. And it's just that the possibilities of life on deeper levels of consciousness open up. And I think that's what we mean by a new world unfolding from within. AI has the exact same thing. Like AI, artificial intelligence, holds out for us possibilities never realized before. Like you can go into, online and certainly find an infinite spectrum of ideas, of possibilities, of creativities. AI also allows us to become more creative. In other words, it can alleviate some of the burden of work, from the old human days, and allow us, we can do things faster and more quickly. But then what do we do with that free time? That's the question with AI. Do we keep skimming the web and looking for cool things? Or do we take that free time and develop our creative gifts, our imagination? And so we're at a threshold with AI now, how we are going to use it and implement it in the ongoing evolution of life. AI can lead us into a new level of ultra-humanism, a new level of planetization. It has the capacity to do that. It also has the capacity to create war and more tribalization than ever before. And we don't know enough, but we have to get, let me say, we have to get a hold of what AI is doing. What we're doing with, what it's doing with us and for us, and what we want. I think that we develop the AI, and it's developing us, but we have to know what is it we want with AI. And we don't have an agreement together. Transhumanists want perfectibility. We want to get smarter, wealthier, live longer, maybe live forever, and become the super species. Well, who's going to benefit from that? Well, people who are smart and wealthy and want to live forever. But then AI can also deeply connect us. We can develop planetary consciousness, planetary compassion. And so, what we're saying is, how much do we rely on AI? Well, we're becoming integrated in AI, so it's not a matter of AI or no AI. It is here. It will be integrated into our lives. And we have to allow ourselves to be open to new ways of understanding ourselves, who we are in our infinite depths, who we are in this AI-mediated world, and what we want to be, what we want will become. We're moving out of individuality and we're moving into a hyper-personality, a hyper-personalism. So I think we're on a threshold right now, and I think mysticism, remaining open to the hidden powers and potentials within us and among us, is perhaps the most important area of our attention right now. What is it that we're being called to in this moment? What is it I feel most deeply in myself, and how do I have the freedom to live from that deeper awareness? So.
Yeah, and also with Evolve, we did an issue on AI and consciousness, and what resonates from you, what you are saying, and what I also heard in the work on that issue, and it makes sense to me that AI is also a certain, and you also named something like that it's kind of a kind of representation of the collective consciousness of who we are as humanity, because it is a kind of representation of who we are, a kind of mirror, or it AI is kind of working with what we are in terms of how we the information and the data we produce, you can say, and so maybe it is in that regard so important also what we express as humans and as humanity. And if there is that depth dimension, that mystical inner dimension, if that is alive, in our, you know, in our being and our
Right.
interactions, so that this is also part of what AI can in a way respond to, or can be of service to, to be of service of that sense of relationality that you were talking about, compassion and this kind of deeper human capacities, rather than, you know, the divisiveness and fragmentation and conflict. So I understand that threshold also in a way, and in a way that this threshold also calls for this kind of mystic awakening in a certain way to see who I mean, the question you raised throughout our conversation, who are we actually as human beings?
That is the question. So that's the question. I think where does the answer lie? You know, that's, and so it's a constant engaging that question. I think that there's no answer. It's the engagement of the question that keeps unfolding and revealing, you know, the infinite potential of life that is within us and among us in ever new ways. And so that's the beauty. And so, you know, I'm not looking for something like when I die, I'm going to go to heaven. I'm saying that it's here. Like, you know, like the goal is in the journey itself, you know, and it's awakening every moment and not feeling like I don't have what I need. I have to rely on everything else outside me. No, you have everything you need in this moment for that fullness of life. And it's a question of how we will engage what we are in the deepest sense of what we are in this moment. Always remaining open to infinite possibilities within us and among us, and then engaging AI in a creative way, you know, that it can help deepen this whole, this field of possibilities. You know, it's not AI or human. It's actually a complex in a field of relational wholeness that's seeking to become more whole.
Thank you very much, Ilya Delio. I would have much more questions, but believe it with this for now. It was a very rich conversation. I really enjoyed that. Thank you very much.
Mike, yeah, I appreciate it, and I hope it goes well, and your listeners, and you can let me know.
Yeah, I will. And thank you everyone for listening and watching. And thank you very much, Ilya Delio. Bye bye.